Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Spring came a little bit late this year, but the spring blooms have been worth the wait. Red buds, magnolias, crabapples, the flowering trees have really put on quite a show. And we're going to start this hour with some advice on choosing the right flowering tree for your landscape. Later on, of course, we will be answering your questions about all the plants and trees in your life. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. But with me right now, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
And Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. And I feel like the cool temperatures over the last week have kind of turned the whole state into a big flower cooler.
They have,
absolutely.
Kind of.
Yeah, the blooms have really been well preserved and lovely, and so many things in bloom at one time this year. I think it's been a pretty spectacular spring.
Yeah, the tulips at Ryman Gardens are still in bloom. The cool weather has kind of helped make them last a lot longer.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So there's still time.
Yes.
Still time to come visit. Well, let's talk about the flowering trees we've been seeing. I don't know. I know that every spring I experience some pretty deep bloom envy as I drive around or ride my bike around town. I see the trees that I think are just gorgeous and imagine having one of those in my yard. So let's talk about redbud trees first, kind of an iconic spring bloom. They don't last too long, but boy, when they're in bloom, they're gorgeous.
They are really nice. Those little kind of lavender flowers come out before the leaves emerge. So the tree just looks like it's coated in pink. It's so pretty.
Well, and I was noticing one of the particularly beautiful redbud trees on my route to work has had blossoms coming out of like the trunk of the tree.
Yeah, that it's one of the few temperate trees that does that.
So the whole thing can
and
get
there's
coated.
A term for that, which I can't
remember. Yeah, it's like cauliflorus or something like that. It looks like cauliflower, so it kind of has that kind of name. But, you know, cacao does that, and there's some other tropical trees that do that. But redbud's one of the few that will bloom on the trunk.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what makes a good site for a redbud tree?
You know, redbuds are native to woodland areas, and so they really like a little bit of protection to be happiest. If it's out kind of in the middle of a big open field, they sometimes suffer in those conditions. So a little bit of protection, especially from winter winds, and, you know, whether it's a single stem or a multi-stem, I think being open to a multi-stem redbud is a great idea because they look just as beautiful, sometimes more interesting, because they can become more of a specimen plant in your yard when that happens. If you can find a nice kind of little corner or alcove, they'll really thrive.
Can they grow anywhere in the state?
You know, they do better in the southern half of the state. The northern half, you really, a tucked away spot is a requirement in the northern half of the state. They can be a little bit more exposed in the southern half, but and once you get up closer to the Minnesota border, they usually don't do as well.
Okay, and they don't get to be overly large.
No,
so
they
that must
don't.
Make them a nice tree for a yard.
I love all these small trees because they do fit in your yard so nicely. There are a lot of wonderful trees, but they get huge in time. And these, you know, less than, you know, 30 feet tall, that's a really good size up next to your house or near your home for that space in between the curb and the sidewalk. Sometimes if you can keep it limbed up high enough, can work really well. They fit in so many great places because of their size.
They grow into such unusual shapes. Is that something that you need to watch so you don't have a tree that topples over?
They know how to stay upright. I think it adds to their charm when they
have character. Yeah, they have character.
Yeah, for sure. They also, so when I was growing up, I grew up in northern Iowa, and we lost a lot of redbud trees because we kept trying to plant them in our yard and it just wasn't protected enough. Now I live in southeast Iowa. Redbud trees are everywhere. And I've also noticed that they volunteer out in the rural areas, which surprised me since we struggled so hard to have one when I was a kid. Now I have a volunteer redbud tree in my yard.
Yes, that happens pretty regularly. And you can nurse one of those along and get a pretty decent little tree out of it with time. It's not an issue that they are a native plant. They're native to the eastern United States. And so When they're happy, that's what they do.
We only really pay attention to them for these 2 weeks or however long they bloom in springtime. What do they do the rest of the year?
You know, they have a really nice kind of heart-shaped leaf. They don't have a lot of disease issue most years, and so it's just a nice kind of clean tree. It has an okay fall color. It's no maple by any stretch, but it does get a little bit of fall color in the autumn, and the rest of the year it's just a really kind of funky little tree.
And are there different kinds of redbud trees, different colors?
There are. The white is another color that you'll find in the flower. And there are some other varieties that have kind of purplish foliage or variegated foliage or foliage that's a different color when it emerges. And those are all really fun. But they do tend to be less winter hardy. And so they definitely won't work in northern Iowa. I'm thinking of things like, I think it's Silver Cloud is one of them. And they're just not quite as winter hardy. And so we see less luck with those kind of fun varieties further north.
There's also one called Cotton Candy, which is a new cultivar. We have one on campus. It looks very nice. It's a pale pink. It's not a pinkish purple, but a nice pale pink.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So that's a great small tree for your landscape if you're looking for some spring blooms. Let's talk about magnolia trees. I feel like there are so many different varieties of magnolia trees. What
there
does
are.
Well in Iowa?
You know, most of the magnolias do fairly well, especially the star and the saucer. And then there's a couple of newer varieties that have a lot of the cucumber magnolia. And cucumber magnolia is not as showy as the other two I mentioned, but they're bred and they have more yellowish flowers. There's a cultivar called Butterflies. That's a good example of that. And they do fairly well in Iowa. The challenge with magnolias is they have these big, beautiful flowers in the spring, and we love them. But a lot of springs, they get nipped by cold. And the plant is perfectly hardy, but the flowers come out so early that we often see a little bit of damage in the cold from that.
The magnolia trees can get really large.
Yeah, and some people would look at it and call it a shrub. And whether you want to call it a really, really large shrub or a broad, multi-stemmed tree, I mean, really is kind of up to you. Probably the plant doesn't care. But they can get quite large with time.
So you need to plan on that for the future.
Yes.
The blossoms, the magnolias, I think, have not been quite as spectacular this year as the crabapple and the redbud tree.
Yes, and I would agree with that. Although this year was a fairly good year for magnolia, especially in certain parts of the state. So it was kind of touch and go in a couple of places. But the crabapples and the redbuds have been really nice this year.
Absolutely. I feel like magnolia trees have gotten more popular with time. Do you feel like they're trending?
Well, I think they're so showy in the spring, and a lot of people buy plants in the spring. So they're top of mind when you're at the nursery. It's real easy to buy a magnolia because you just saw them, and they were just so beautiful, and it's easy to get one in your yard that way. A lot of our gardens tend to be a little spring bloom heavy for that very reason.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about crabapples because, again, it has been a spectacular spring for crabapples. And there are so many different kinds of crabapples. I mean, I know Jeff Isles could give us a 4-hour treatise on all of the different kinds of crabapples. So as you drive around or ride your bike or look at all of these beautiful blooms, what are the ones that really stand out for you?
You know, there's a lot of really nice new cultivars that don't have some of the disease issues a lot of the older varieties did. And so it's real common for the older varieties to be really severely defoliated by late summer by apple scab and other diseases. And a lot of the newer ones do a lot better. One of my favorite, and I think it's Richard's favorite too, is Adirondack. This is a really base-shaped tree, white flowers, I think, and has a nice little fruit in the fall. One of the nicest things about crab apples is that they do have multi-season interest. They often have these beautiful whites or pinks or dark pinks to reds, almost purpley color sometimes, flowers, and then really wonderful small fruit that the birds and other wildlife love in the fall. So you get more than one season out of this little
tree. Now, of course, some people don't really appreciate
it. I know, some people don't like the fruit. But the interesting thing is there are some really great cultivars where the fruit persists really strongly, and then the birds pluck it off before it falls off. And those are great. Those are great. You can appreciate the fruit and its color while it's there, and then support some wildlife in the process.
Now, I have a sad story about a crabapple tree in my yard, which is that my husband and I really wanted a purple crabapple tree, and we went to a nursery, and we bought a crabapple tree that was labeled purple. and it's white.
Oh, yeah.
It's still pretty.
It is. That wasn't as sad as I thought it was going to be.
Oh,
Charity.
No. Well,
it still ended with a pretty tree. So.
It felt pretty sad when the first time it bloomed and we were like, oh, bummer. But yeah, it's a pretty white tree. And someday it will be big. And crabapple trees, I know, come in a variety of sizes as well. So that's something important to think about when
yeah.
you're picking one out.
Sizes and shape or habit. So you can get very compact, kind of rounded forms, very spreading, open forms, more vase shape, more upright, weeping. There's a lot of different options.
Do you have a crab apple?
I do. Mine, what? I have, in my yard, I have Sugar Time, which I really like. It's a kind of a little guy that sits up really kind of close to my house, helps kind of bring the roof line a little bit lower so the house doesn't look like it's standing up so tall.
So those are the three trees that have been very prominent in the
yeah.
last few weeks. Any other flowering trees that are on your list?
My list, I really enjoy yellowwood. So this is another native understory tree like redbud. It blooms later in the spring, maybe a little closer to Memorial Day. It has these long panicles of white flowers, which are really pretty when they bloom. I also really like amelanchier or serviceberry. This is usually multi-stemmed white blooms. Also, most of them have a really nice fall color, so that's a nice nice small tree to consider in the yard. I don't know, Richard, you have others,
and possibly
too, right?
Cornelian cherry dogwood.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
One of the first things to bloom. Fairly small flowers, yellow, but one of the first things to bloom in the spring of the year, kind of a large kind of fat shrub or small tree.
All right, so maybe not quite as showy. As
oh, it's super showy
is
when
it?
It's in
okay.
bloom. Yes, it's in bloom like middle of March sometimes.
Nice.
Especially
yeah.
if you have a nice dark background mm-hmm. where you can see the yellow quite easily.
And it brings a lot of hope in mid-March.
It does. It's always a welcome sign that time of year.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. You can ask questions about flowering trees and shrubs or any of the plants and trees in your life. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Call us at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about flowering trees, but of course we will answer your questions about any of the plants and trees in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to the phones. Oh, I should mention, Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames is here, along with Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Now let's go to the phones. Ryan is on the line in Windsor Heights. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, I have an apple tree in my backyard. I don't know what kind of apple tree. It's been there probably since before I've been around, but it's not doing well. It's kind of, it has a lot of dead wood on it. It's shaded and being crowded by other trees. I have two questions. One, is there a particular time, I mean, the branches I'm talking about are dead. Is mm-hmm. there a time that I need to wait to trim the dead wood off? And the second question is at the middle of the tree where the branches, it's about 4 to 5 feet up from the ground, the tree branches out into main, from the trunk to main branches up from there. And in the middle there, it's rotting out in the middle. Mm. Like there are places where there used to be major branches that have fallen out. And so you can see the big round scar of it. And it's rotted out so much that you can stick your hand down in one hole in the trunk and pop it out where another branch used to be.
Oh,
okay. Well, as far as dead limbs, with the possible exception of oaks, you can prune out dead limbs in any tree at any time of year. Because they're dead, they don't serve a useful purpose, and you can prune them out at any time during the year. The presence of that rotting at the crotch or the crotch area is going to weaken the tree, and I think at some future point, you're going to get a storm, either a windstorm or an ice storm. And because of that structural weakness, the tree is going to be destroyed. So I would guess the life of the tree may be somewhat short at this point.
I wondered. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Ryan. Let's do another apple tree question, hopefully with a happier ending. This is Carmen in Wyoming. Hi, Carmen.
Good morning. My question is about when we first got married, which was 55 years ago, we had a jelly crab tree in our backyard. And it was a beautiful fuchsia-colored bloom in the spring. And then it had apples on it about the size of a plum in the fall or late summer, early fall. It was the meat of the apple was ruby red, and it made the most delicious jelly. And it was called, my mother-in-law called it a jelly crab tree. I'm just wondering if it blew down. Of course, it got old. And do they have such a thing anymore? I'd love to get one if there is.
There are a few varieties that were basically grown for their fruit. The fruit are maybe an inch or two in diameter, and they make excellent jelly. They're kind of hard to find nowadays as far as those varieties. I think one was Dolgo, D-O-L-G-O was one. But there are two or three that were grown specifically for the edible fruit. But they're kind of hard to find. But you might check on the internet and see what you can find one. Dolgo is one.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you so very much, and you have a blessed day.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Carmen. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Sharon is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Hello. Well, I have a flowering crab that I purchased when the water company a few years ago offered to sell some trees for $25 a piece, and I bought it, and it has done very well. I have two of them, actually. They bloom almost alternate years, it seems. I haven't kept track. Last year, it bloomed profusely. This year, it has a very few blossoms at the very top of the tree. Is there anything, is that just the nature of the tree? Or is there anything I should be doing to the tree?
That's just the nature of that variety. Trees tend to be heavy bloomers in alternate years. I have a Selkirk, which last year was just full of bloom. It had many, many, many fruit. In fact, some of the branches were so loaded they were touching the ground. This spring, just a very few scattered flowers. So there are certain varieties that tend to do that. Others are much more consistent. That they'll bloom heavily every spring. So apparently you have one that blooms in alternate years.
That's fine with me as long as I know it's healthy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Garrett is on the line next in Marshalltown. Hi, Garrett.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
I was calling to see when's the best time of year to trim a butterfly bush.
I think for a butterfly bush, I like to wait until I can see new growth starting, and that should be any time now. It does get started a little bit later than most of our perennials do, but I wait to see that new growth come out, and then I'll trim back to the green, because every year you might get more or less winter dieback, and that'll allow you to keep the largest plant possible.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call. And let's do a few email questions here. Let's start with Cliff in Iowa City. He says, as a longtime listener, I know I should treat my ground ivy in the fall. Well, I didn't get to it, and now I have a big problem in my lawn. Is one type of herbicide better than others for springtime use, or is it a lost cause until fall?
I would still use a product containing triclopyr. That's T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. It tends to be the most effective. And I think if you apply it in the spring, hopefully what you'll get is maybe it's going to maybe contain it somewhat where it isn't quite as vigorous, okay? And then hopefully in the fall, maybe get rid of it, basically. So hopefully if you apply it in the spring, it may contain it somewhat.
All right. Here's a question from Amanda in Waterloo. And again, you can send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can call 866-780-9100. Amanda's question is, I planted a gold cone juniper last fall, and after the winter, a large portion of its midsection is brown and dead. Can I expect it to produce new growth in this area if I were to cut out the dead section, or is it a lost cause?
Well, I would say, first of all, that the first winter of a newly planted tree or shrub tends to be the worst or most difficult. And so sometimes you can get some winter injury. And unfortunately, this past winter was a very difficult winter as far as cold temperatures.
Yes, we remember.
So, yes. So it's not a good thing for that plant. Junipers and most other evergreens don't have the same recuperative ability as deciduous trees and shrubs. So they don't develop new growth very much from bare areas. Now, if it's not too big, it might eventually fill in. But if it's huge, it may never fill in. But I'd probably give it a chance to see what it does. It hasn't started growing yet. It should in the next few weeks. And so by, I would think, midsummer, you would have some idea if it's moving back into those bare areas.
All right, here's another question on the subject of flowering trees. Why is my white flowering crabapple tree not blooming except for just a few clusters at the tops of the branches? Last year, they bloomed profusely, but occasionally they hardly bloom at all.
I think, again, that's a cultivar thing where some are very consistent bloomers and some are more sporadic, unfortunately.
Right. So hang on for next year.
Yeah. Well, and if your crabapple's in a lot of shade, it's not going to produce as many flowers either. So you want to check in on that as well.
All right, because that environment can change dramatically
over time. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Larry's on the line in Ottumwa. Hi, Larry.
Hi, good morning.
What's your question?
Well, I have five trees planted basically about 25 or 30 feet apart. First two are apple trees. I have a pear tree in the middle and then two more apple trees. And my apple trees... first of all, my question, I guess, is the pear tree doesn't seem to do very well. Is that, do I need two pear trees to do something, or do pears and apples work together very well? My second question is about the apple trees. It seems, though, that the branches, as I say, the trees are 15 or so years old. The branch, from time to time, a branch will, the bark will die off and shrivel and curl up and it just die during the middle of the growing season. Is that some kind of disease or something that I need to be spraying for or using copper sulfate or whatever? I'm at a loss with these apple trees to try to save them.
Well, as far as some of the issues that you mentioned, apples and pears are not self-fruitful, so you need at least two different varieties of each to get pollination and fruit set. So two different varieties are cultivars. As far as growing them, we can grow apples and pears quite well here in Iowa. They're perfectly hardy. As far as the dead limbs, I'm not sure exactly what's occurring there, but spraying the tree is not going to help at all. That's basically to protect against foliar diseases, not things that might affect the branch. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but I would prune them out once they appear, but you can't prevent it.
I see. I also have a pine tree that's about 40 or so, 35 or 40 feet away from these trees. Are pines an enemy of fruit trees?
No, they are not. No, they're not.
They're not. The pine needles are very acidic, they seem to be, and nothing seems to want to grow under a pine tree. And I didn't know whether the pollen or something, whatever, from the pine needles would do anything to the fruit.
Absolutely not. The only connection between an evergreen and some of the fruit trees would be the eastern red cedar and the apple. There's cedar apple rust, which goes back and forth between those two tree species, very common in Iowa. But as far as pines, spruce fir, no connection.
What do you recommend for a spraying pattern for these trees then? I see lots of different combinations and lots of different things. The dormant oil spray in the spring, is that, or in the fall, is that effective? And is this copper, whatever spray, something I need to think about?
Well, the dormant oil spray actually is of limited benefit Basically, you apply that in late winter, early spring before bud break, and it does control certain insects like scale, but it doesn't affect the insects that attack the fruit, damage the fruit. So in that regard, they're not very beneficial. As far as spraying the tree, you're kind of limited as far as products. Most garden centers will have a home orchard spray or home fruit tree spray. And with those products, you're typically limited to 2 sprays each year. And if that's the case, I would spray my apple trees around mid-June and early July for best effect.
I see. So it's still too early now. You want the fruit to be, the small fruit to be set on the tree before you spray them?
Right. You definitely don't want to spray during bloom because you want the bees and other pollinators to do their job. So don't spray during bloom. But you're basically trying to protect the fruit from insects that might damage it. And so they're going to form as soon as we have blossom drop.
Right. Well, I'm in southern southeastern Iowa, and our weather, our rain the last few days, all the blossoms and blooms have been blown off the trees now. So I think I'm safe for this with it. I won't spray for a while, but I will. Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Larry. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's talk to another Larry, this one in Iowa City. Hi, Larry.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, we seem to have lost several mature bushes over the winter, and I'm wondering if that's been common around southeast Iowa. We're in the Iowa City area, and we seem to have lost 5 mature beauty bushes and 5 mature burning bushes, a bridal wreath, and we have some young burning bushes that survived the winter fine, and we have some young bridal wreaths that did fine. But the mature bushes appear to be completely dead. They aren't leafing out at all.
I haven't noticed that here in central Iowa, in Ames or Des Moines. Yes, we did have a very difficult winter, very cold temperatures, but most plants that I have seen have leafed out just fine. So some of the things that are kind of marginally hardy, like Japanese maples, some of those didn't do very good, but they're kind of marginally hardy.
Yeah,
and we also had some 3 young dogwood trees that don't appear to have made it through the winter as well.
Are they flowering dogwoods?
Yes.
Yeah, the flowering dogwoods are kind of iffy in Iowa, so that wouldn't surprise me on the flowering dogwoods. But the hardier dogwoods, like our shrub dogwoods, they did perfectly fine.
So why would the mature bushes have survived and the young ones didn't, particularly the burning bushes? We've got 5 young burning bush that are leafing out, you know, normally, and close by are the ones that are almost 20 years old or more, and they all seem dead.
Well, that doesn't seem logical to me as far as what would typically happen, in that when you plant something, the first 2 or 3 years, you might lose them. They're not well established. And if you have some very drastic weather, that could affect them. But if they've been there for a number of years, typically they have tolerated those conditions that are well established. So normally it's where a younger tree or shrub might not survive. The well-established ones typically do, so I'm not sure what's going on there.
Is there any growth near the base that's coming, especially on the bridal wreath and the burning bush? They will resprout from the base if the top dies, usually.
I've noticed a few small leaves at the base of a couple of the burning bushes. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it on the bridal wreath, so I'm wondering if that means that the plant is still alive, and should we, you know, stool them? Should we trim them way back or something?
Yeah, I think what I would probably do is maybe wait another 2 or 3 weeks, and then if the upper portion has not leafed out at all, I would cut it back to the ground. And for example, spirea's are kind of hard to kill. And if the root system itself is still alive, and for some reason the top part died, they will typically sprout very quickly. And I would think by midsummer, you might see maybe 1 or 2 of new growth. So that would be my inclination, is to wait a little bit and then prune out the dead.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Larry. And before we get to the break, here's a quick one for you from Kay. What should I do with my tulips after they have finished blooming?
Well, if they are, you want a deadhead, remove the flower, and then let the leaves die back, and then just let them be. Some tulips will come back like champs every year, and will get better and better, and other tulips, especially the really showy hybrid ones, tend to peter out after a couple of years, so you might notice that over the next several years that they get smaller and smaller, but the only thing you really need to do is deadhead and let them die back.
All right, deadhead meaning cut off the tops.
Yep, cut off the, not the tops, just the flower stalk.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
All right, and you at Ryman Gardens, when you want a really tight display of tulips, you actually dig them up, right?
Yes, we treat our tulips like annuals at the gardens. That way we get a nice display every year and we can change it up every year.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They're here to answer your questions. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we've got Esther on the line in Donaldson. Hello, Esther.
Good morning. My question is about the reason our lilacs are not blooming. We live out in the country. We inherited a big walnut tree in our front yard when we moved here. And probably 5 or 6 years ago, our neighbor gave us starts of lilac bush. So we planted them around our septic drain or whatever you call it, vent, and to hide it. And the bush itself is growing beautifully. It looks great, but it's probably been 5-6 years and there's never been a bloom.
Okay.
Now our neighbor's up the road is blooming really well. So I don't know if it's the walnut tree or my husband thinks maybe it doesn't get enough sun because it is shaded in the morning by cottonwood tree. So
okay.
Have you got any
Well, how big is it? How big is it as far as height-wise?
It's probably, my husband thinks, 4 foot tall.
Okay. I think it's mainly a maturity issue where when you plant a lilac, it has to grow and mature to a certain size before it's able to flower. And 4 feet is not very big. So if you have like a common lilac, they don't often bloom until they're like maybe 6 feet tall, 8 foot tall. So I would suspect they will. Given some time. Now the shade the shade may be a factor too in that they bloom best in full sun. In shady areas not as much. But I think initially the problem is a lack of maturity yet. They aren't big enough. They're not mature enough to flower yet.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better. So you don't think the walnut has
I really don't. So I would expect to see maybe some flowering when they get about 6 feet tall, hopefully.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Esther. Let's do a few email questions here. This is from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. We have a towering old tree next to our garage. Having had a murderous old silver maple at our previous home, I am concerned about the health and longevity of this tree. And I just have to note that is the first time I've heard a tree called murderous. She says, I would like to get an objective expert to look at it and advise if and when it should be trimmed or taken down.
Mm-hmm.
How do I find someone who will be objective and not just try to sell me their services?
Well, I would contact a certified arborist. And one way of doing that is to go on your computer to a search engine like Google and type in trees are good. Trees are good. That's an Arboriculture Society website. And then you choose your country, United States, and you put in your zip code, and they will give you a list of certified arborists within 100 miles of your location.
All right. And if they're a certified arborist, you feel like you can trust them to take a look at your tree and not try to talk you up.
Because they are certified, that denotes a certain amount of expertise or knowledge, and that's better than somebody with a pickup and a chainsaw.
All right. Good luck with that, Stephanie. And this one's from Kathy in Donahue. We just bought two weeping trees, a weeping redbud and a weeping cherry. I want to make sure they continue to weep. Do you have any suggestions on keeping new branches growing down and not up?
Well, there will be a few branches that kind of curve a little bit upward, but both of those are trees that they are going to always kind of have a more downward kind of trajectory. You will see, especially on the redbud, you'll see some new branches that kind of go up and then arc back down, and that's okay. There's nothing you should need to do to either of those plants to keep them weeping. Now, you will want to watch at the base of the plant because a lot of times they are grafted onto rootstock, and if that rootstock grows, that will not be weeping, and so you'll want to prune those branches out. But that would have to come from either below the ground, like as a sucker, or sometimes it may come kind of from the middle of the trunk because the weeping variety is grafted on top of a tall stem. But you'll see this big knob where the graft union was, and anything that sprouts from below that knob, you would want to remove.
All right, so you don't have to do much.
You shouldn't have to do much, and the cherry probably won't be around very long anyway. Cherries in general are not long-lived in Iowa, and so I would be surprised that if in 5 years she still has the weeping cherry.
Oh, well, that's cheery.
Yeah. but you can enjoy it in that time that it's there. They're just not well suited for our climate.
With weeping trees in the early years, do you find that it takes them a while to really start weeping?
You know, I think it depends on the type of weeping plant that it is. You know, some are very strongly weeping. In fact, if they weren't grafted on something, they'd just be crawling on the ground. And others maybe are a bit more kind of cascading or just have kind of a not quite as strong of a weeping habit. Some are weeping simply because they are not strong enough to hold up limbs. They just kind of dangle. So there's different kinds of weeping. Most of the time, if they're sold as a weeping variety, you don't have to do anything to them to keep them from growing straight upward. They naturally grow that way.
All right, let's go back to the phones and another cherry tree question. I think maybe Richard should take this one, Aaron. You may be a little too brutal.
I don't
when
know
it comes
if he'll be any
trees.
Different.
Frank in Fairfield. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. So you may have just answered this question. I have half a dozen Yoshino ornamental cherry trees, like they have at the mall in Washington, D.C., and they are coming back, but they didn't bloom, and they are struggling this year. They're about three years old. Is there anything I can do to give them a boost, or is it,
I'm assuming the cold temperatures were the culprit, and the cold temperatures were cold enough to destroy the flower buds, hence they didn't bloom, but I would be happy that the trees themselves did survive. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is they've been damaged possibly by the cold temperatures. So I would try to provide the best growing conditions I could this growing season, meaning basically that I'm going to water during prolonged dry periods if we have those so that it has ample moisture. You could give it a little bit of fertilizer, like a 10-10-10, just kind of sprinkle a little bit around the trees and make sure it has ample moisture if we have dry periods.
Uh-huh. Well, they have those tree spikes, hammer it. Are they any good?
They're not very effective because there aren't that many roots that are close to those actual stakes. So I would just take a little bit of fertilizer and just kind of sprinkle it around the tree so that most of the roots get access to it.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thank you. That was more optimistic than I expected.
Yeah. Good job, Richard. I'm sure you would have been.
I have a more sunny approach
right.
to things.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing too much. All right. Let's go back to the phones. Sari is on the line in Thompson. Hi.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I have a flowering crab in my backyard that my parents planted maybe 40 years ago. It started out as a beautiful, deep, dark, red blooming plant, and over the years has slowly been what I consider now to be schizophrenic because it blooms in the pale pink and in the deep red still. It was top and bottom for a while, and now it's side to side pretty much. with the pale overtaking the darker color.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what the reason is for that. I think I know, but I want to hear somebody experience tell me.
It sounds like the rootstock has kind of overcome the top part of this tree. So most crab apples are grafted. So there's a different cultivar for the root system, and then the upper portion is a different plant that are grafted together to grow together as one plant. And sometimes if you allow the suckers or some of the lower branches that emerge from the base of the tree to grow, often the rootstock is a very vigorous plant, and it often has kind of a boring flower. And so if that is allowed to take over, it can overcome the top portion of the plant, and it sounds like that's what's happened here.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought it was, that it was from a graft, but I wasn't sure. And it's just kind of been fun to look at it and see how much is going to be pink and how much of it's going to be the darker color every year.
Yeah, and I'm sure the pink gets a little bit more every year and the darker color gets a little bit less.
Yep, exactly. Well, thank you very much. I enjoy listening to your show every week. I learn something. So thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call and for listening. Bruce is up next in Waterloo. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning. I've got a couple of lawn weed control related questions.
Okay.
Let's take the easy one first, I think. I think it's a bunch grass. I think it's maybe in the fescue family from some people that want to have a pure bluegrass stand. And I've got these bunch grasses, and that's going to take some pretty aggressive work to get that eliminated out of a bluegrass stand, isn't it?
Well, if you have a perennial-type grass that is present right now, there is no way to selectively remove it without harming the bluegrass. So your options are to tolerate its presence in the lawn or to spot treat with Roundup or dig it up. But there's no selective way of getting rid of it and not the grass, the turf grass.
That's what I thought. Okay, let's move to the difficult question then. We've got a weed with a pretty intense, some rhizomes. When I washed off the root mass that we're looking at, it's got some rhizomes, and it's got an above-ground leaf area. It kind of looks like carrots or something like that. Pretty narrow, bunchy kind of leaves. And it grows real decumberly, real close to the ground. So they're having trouble mowing it out of there or, you know, taking care of it with mowing. We don't see any flowers on it since they mow it all the time. But when you've got that much rhizomes underneath the ground, that's going to be pretty difficult to take out too, isn't it? Kind of like violets maybe?
It could be. I guess I would try a product like Trimec. I say that because Trimec contains three different chemicals. And so if one actual compound is not very effective on it, at least you have two other compounds that might. So I would try that. Trimec, which typically has 2,4-D in it, dicamba and MCPP, I would try that, and it may require a second application, but I would try that. We tend to get better control in the fall, though, I will say that. So they could try it this spring. If it doesn't do very good, I would try it again basically in the fall, sometime between late September and mid-November.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Thanks a lot for your call, Bruce. Next up, we've got Jim in Des Moines. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Real quick, it's kind of on the same lines as the last caller. Just crabgrass question. So I've got some chemicals to treat it, and it's doing a really good job of seemingly killing it, but I'm not sure when I should either pull that or pick up. It's turning brown, and it looks like it's dying, but I'm not sure if I need to just let it keep dying or pull it up at this point.
Now, crabgrass is an annual grass, and it dies in the fall with the first hard freeze. And right now, crabgrass is not present. It typically germinates sometime in the spring, and we usually start seeing it in the lawn sometime around late June, early July. And it really does well.
Maybe it's Creeping Charlie then.
Well, Creeping Charlie is blooming right now. It's a nice green plant, very lush. It's blooming right now. So, and it's definitely not a grass. Ground ivy or Creeping Charlie is a broadleaf plant. So, but it's very green and it's blooming right now. So this is brown, what you're seeing?
Well, I've treated it. Treated it with some weed killer, and it's dying back really well, but I don't know If I just need to keep letting it, it must be creeping, Charlie. I get the two mixed up.
Okay. What did you apply as far as a herbicide?
It's called a Spectracide weed killer, and it has something in it that's supposed to kill crabgrass. That's why that's what I've been applying.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what product that would be. There are some products that will control crabgrass when they're small, when they have germinated as far as the seed, but that's a post-emergent herbicide. The crabgrass is definitely not there yet.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly what to expect.
Yeah,
this stuff kills like 470 weed types as listed, it says. It has lots of chemical words that I can't really pronounce.
Yeah, I think I would go read the label very carefully and see what they're trying to control with that product and then go from there.
All right. Yeah, good luck with that, Jim. Let's try to get to a few email questions before we run out of time. This one's from Jason. Please ask your experts about the characteristics and care of a newly planted Bloodgood Japanese maple I just planted in my yard. Do they have any tips that will help me establish it?
Yeah, make sure you get it in a nice protected location. That will be number one. Protecting from the winter winds, and just treat it really nicely, especially the first couple of years, watering when there's drought periods, that type of thing. It'll also be really important to protect it from rabbits and other critters over the winter months. Japanese maple are a favorite for those critters to peel bark off over the winter months. And then just kind of hope for the best. But I mean, that is one of the more hardy varieties of Japanese maple, and good siting will make all the difference. If it's in a like a protected spot near a building, protecting it from some of those winter winds, I've seen some beautiful Bloodgood Japanese maples around when they're put in the right location.
The site is critical, yes.
All right, here's a question from Kevin. He said, you mentioned pruning trees earlier, and Richard gave instructions except for oak trees. I have a number of old oak trees that are well-established. A few of them have large limbs that are dead. When is the best time to cut them off?
I would prune those off in the wintertime.
Right. Wait.
Yes, wait on those.
All right, and that's?
Because of oak wilt.
Right.
And even though the branch is dead, when you make the pruning cut, you might cut back into live tissue, and that's the problem.
All right, and a final question. I have a hedgerow of euonymus bushes that are showing little or no sign of leafing out. Should there be leaves on them by now? And
yes.
If they, okay.
So, is there anything, I would be concerned.
Is there anything she can do?
No, just wait. Hopefully it will leaf out. I would wait till the end of May.
Yeah, my threshold's always Memorial Day.
Yeah. If it hasn't leafed out on the top part, it's dead, but they should be seeing, I think, some shoots at the base.
All right. Speaking of Memorial Day, I think my peonies are ahead of schedule this year after a late spring.
I think a little bit, yes.
Interesting.
Maybe a week or so.
All right. We will be back next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And Aaron Stile, thank you.
A pleasure as always.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. We had production assistance today from Stephanie Nobringa. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, and Emily Woodbury. You can follow us on Twitter at Iowa Public Radio, and please subscribe to our podcast, Talk of Iowa, wherever you get your podcasts.